I'm Barbara Fritschel, the Federal Court Law Librarian at the U.S. Courts in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In celebration of Women's History Month, we present a special edit of our wide-ranging interview with retired bankruptcy judge Margaret D. McGarrity. In 2017, she spoke with us about her passion for solving complex puzzles. This passion can be seen in her choice of hobbies and charitable endeavors. But for Women's History Month, we present the portion of the interview that examines how Judge McGarrity used her problem-solving skills to overcome professional as well as cultural challenges to become the first woman appointed to the Eastern District of Wisconsin Bankruptcy Court. Let's listen in.
Where did you get this drive for being of use in the community? I mean, is this something that you got from your parents? Is this something that you feel you got going to law school, UW-Madison in the 70s?
You know, I have no idea. I just know I have to be useful. I do know my parents were good examples of drive. My father was a volunteer. He would go over to it was a mental hospital, and he would run errands for people, go out and get them snacks or cigarettes or something. But he would sit and listen. He was just that type of person, and that was his volunteer activity. My mother, not so much, but she was one of those people that was a bookkeeper, but she worked for a small company and also did the corporate tax returns. So she was definitely a smart lady, but neither of my parents were educated. They didn't go to college, couldn't afford to back in the Depression. And so I could say that both of them were fairly driven folks. And me too. I was pretty driven in my career, and I really got where I wanted to go. But there was more to me than that, able to volunteer.
Do you think your parents had plans for you when you were younger? Do you think that they imagined you were going to go to law school and have the kind of career that you've had?
Never. Not a chance. No. I don't think my father was more the laissez-faire, she'll do what she's able to sort of person. My mother was very entrenched in it's a man's world, and she had ideas for me that were very ambitious, but they were very 1940s and 50s woman-centric positions, like being a debutante and being a society person and, putting on charity balls and marrying somebody really rich. Wasn't me. It just didn't work at all. She just didn't quite know what to do with me.
Well, you didn't want to be decorative.
Decorative was really not an option, frankly. So I'm not, I didn't want to be decorative. I would never have been happy decorative. And she would tell me not to act like I was smart, with guys that I might be dating, because that might intimidate them. And, sorry, I am what I am. And there were guys that were okay with it. So I was fine in that area.
But how did you find yourself then deciding to go to law school?
Well, I graduated from Emory, did very well, got a job with the YWCA in Atlanta, but my former husband was a medical physicist, and he got a job. It's kind of a specialty. It's a very much a specialty, and so he got a job with University Hospitals in Madison. And in Madison, back in the 70s, we moved there it was September of 1970, about a week after the bombing of the Army Math Building in Madison. There were still boarded up windows and all over the place, People in Atlanta were making jokes about, if you go to Madison, do you have to be a bricklayer or something? Because there were bombs going off, and it was the height of the protests of the Vietnam War. And there were a lot of educated women in Madison. And so for women's jobs, which back in those days were mostly teaching and nursing, and a social service agency like I had been a part of, there were just, oh, tons and tons of people applying for every single job. There just wasn't anything to do. So I said, well, I'll go back to school. What can I do? Well, I don't want to do anything that women do because you can't get a job. I didn't want to be a nurse and I didn't want to be a teacher. Find professions if you're cut out for it. I knew I wasn't. So the first thing that crosses your mind are law and medicine, although, you know, why I didn't consider engineering or architecture, it could have been. But I thought of those two, medicine. Oh, well, I did okay in chemistry, but it was not my favorite. Law, yeah, I can do that. And, of course, the women's movement was very vocal in those days. Some said strident, angry, noisy, but a lot of us paid attention. Maybe not to the degree of some of the more strident members, but it didn't make any sense to me why I couldn't go to law school. And I got in right away, because like I said, I did very well at Emory. And it just suited me. It suited me just fine. And I have pretty good follow through when it comes to trying to do things. I don't quit easily. And if I do quit, it's not because it's hard, it's because it just isn't for me and not suited for my personality. But I did okay in law school.
And so upon graduating, what were your plans? Did you imagine, okay, I'm going to work for a firm? Or?
Yes, I did. I imagined going to work for a firm. My husband, by then, had moved over to St. Luke's Hospital in Milwaukee. So I commuted a good bit at the end of my law school career, Badger bus, thank goodness. And but the lawyers who were coming to Madison to interview law students had not heard about the women's movement, were totally oblivious to the fact that, yeah, women could be lawyers. I don't mean that across the board, but quite a few of them. And certainly the ones in firms, when I first started, or when I was interviewing, which would have been early 74, end of 73, there was one woman in one of the large firms in Milwaukee, and nobody else had any women. Not a one. They had had women, but it was explained to me that, yeah, they had some girl lawyers, but they're not going to do that anymore, which is a nice thing to say to an interviewee, but probably because they weren't treated too well. Anyway.
Did you expect to encounter these attitudes, or were you surprised?
No, I was shocked. I was totally shocked. You know, I'd been going to law school for 3 years, and someone comes and sits down and says, hi, what does your husband do? Tells me he's not very interested in me. Or one who actually came out and said, gee, I don't know how to interview a woman. I probably said something like, maybe like you interview a man, or something like that, or is my other head sticking out? I don't remember what it was, but I knew that the interview was going to be, I'd never get that 15 minutes back in my life. some of them were very nice, some were downright hostile. Eventually, I did get a job with a bank. As far as I know, in my class, there were about 40 women in my class. We were the first large class of women at UW. And I don't know of any others that were in the public sector. In the private sector. I think maybe some went to work for the district attorney. There were opportunities there, legal aid. But firms, no. The next year, there was a large class of women right behind me, about 80 or so. And so men had to they didn't have the choice of avoiding women like they did early on. If there were only a few in the whole city, you know, you could live your whole profession and not have to deal with a woman. But once we got numerous, that wasn't true anymore. And many of them found out we were downright competent.
Well, but now you've just graduated. You don't have really any role models you can look to. How did you piece together what to do?
Well, no role model? Sure I did. I had two tax classes with Shirley Abrahamson. You bet I did. And there were a number of other of women who were professors. So, I knew there were women out there, and they were in the news. You know, there were more and more of them. Like I say, the women's movement was quite visible. So I knew they were there, and the law is something that allows for large variation in personality and style. And so I was not really uncomfortable with that. I knew I could do the job. And as I said, I don't quit because it's hard. If I do things, I don't know they're hard until I've done them. So.
Well, you go through this interview process, kind of mm-hmm. hit this brick wall, and then is that when you decide to go into private practice?
I liked probating estates for the bank, and they also used me, I mean that in the best way, as sort of public relations. You know, here we've got a woman lawyer, and we can send her out to women's clubs and church groups and whatever to talk about estate planning, you know, to get business. And I didn't realize that I couldn't tell an employer, I'm sorry, I don't do public speaking. I just did it. And so that is very helpful when it comes to standing up in court. And I wanted to branch out and do more. So anyway, I ended up sharing space as a sole practitioner. I wasn't going to interview with anybody. And still fresh in my mind. It happened to be a firm that had some space. And I was getting referrals from the bank, you know, from my friends at the bank. So I was writing a lot of wills and things, and I wanted to do divorces, and, you know, those eventually came in. And I knew somebody, in fact, the judge who married us, my current husband and myself, current meaning 41 years ago, he was a judge out at Children's Court. He was a fairly new judge, so he gave me appointments out in Children's Court. I was active in the YWCA up here. In fact, I was president for a while. And I joined bar committees. If you have to be in court, go early. Schmooze with people. Tell them what you do. At bar conventions, work the room. I saw described one time as a functional introvert. So even though I don't enjoy, I can work the room, talk to strangers, walk up to strange people, but afterwards I'm very tired. It's not really my personality. You know, I gain my energy hunched over my sewing machine. I guess you figured that out. But it's what you do when you are in private practice. And eventually I became a bankruptcy trustee. Seemed to me very similar to probating estates, just doing it for creditors instead of beneficiaries.
How did that opportunity even present itself?
Well, I knew a lawyer who knew Judge Hilgendorf. And back then, the judges appointed trustees. It wasn't through the U.S. trustee system. After I'd been a trustee for a while, of course, I applied through the trustee system, and that went into effect. And so I just continued it. And if you make it known that you have different levels of expertise, you get to know the other trustees. I would just call them up. I had so many mentors. I tried to spread them out so I didn't become a pest. But call up another trustee and chat them up and say, who do you know that appraises cars? Something like that. I networked. I did. It was very hard work. And like I say, I didn't realize how hard it was until I had built up a pretty good practice. And then I joined the firm that I was sharing space with, and my partners were wonderful. I always tell people, if you are exposed to a mentor like Ben Chernoff, pay attention, because he was the best.
So there were, during that time frame, a lot of men that were receptive to this idea that
Absolutely.
Women were.
Yeah, yeah. Those didn't surprise me. The shocks came when all of a sudden I'd be negotiating with somebody and, okay, yeah, well, we want that. Okay, you want that. Yeah, all right. We want this. No, I don't think we can do that. And then they go nuts. And that's when I would get shocked, you know.
When you would say no to something.
When I would say no to something that a man wanted me to do. And it took a couple of times before I realized it really had to do with lack of respect. And it's still going on because I know a woman who is in an organization that I'm in, and she was saying, I've never had a man hang up on me like that. He just started screaming at me. And I said, it's lack of respect. It still goes on. Not like it used to, because I don't think there are too many men who can credibly say a woman can't be a lawyer, can't do the job. There were a lot of them who said it back in the 70s. And I would get feedback, particularly from job interviews. One whose name was well known in Milwaukee, who was a friend of another law student's parents, and, oh, I wouldn't have a woman in my firm. Well, he should see now his firm is about half women. So I guess there are still folks, particularly older ones, the ancients, who feel that way.
Well, and then, you know, you have all of these talented women during that time frame, mm-hmm. and so they don't have access to certain avenues in their career. So right. then they go on another, and look where they
look
are.
Where they end up. Yes,
I mean in the federal courts.
Sure.
Suspected judge. How did you come to the courts?
Well, I knew in law school that I would like to be a judge. Reading cases and everything, it just seemed to me to be. To suit me, because I just had the personality for it. I'm not really naturally a combative person, I can be. Again, real tired after one of those episodes, but I can be. And I also trusted my own judgment, and I know I always have trusted my judgment. I have also been colossally wrong. You are what you are. So I thought being a judge would suit me. Well, I did a lot of divorces and children's court over in state court, and then as a trustee in bankruptcy and as representing debtors and creditors, there was just such a contrast between the state and federal courts. I said, well, I'm not going to be a judge until I can be a bankruptcy judge. But bankruptcy has a lot of the, the nuances, in essence. I used to say that I did probate, divorce, bankruptcy, children's court. I specialized in family disasters. And bankruptcy has a lot of those same human issues that come up, but even though the body of law is different. And so that's what I liked about bankruptcy. It was so varied. Every aspect of the human condition except somebody's broke. And officially broke, not just really and truly broke, but officially broke. And so I got the human part of it, the intellectual stimulation, but then human aspects were very close to the earth. And that it was very appealing, continues to be appealing. Stayed appealing throughout my job as a bankruptcy judge.
Well, and what does a bankruptcy judge do? Not the day-to-day tasks, but what purpose do they serve to the people that are in that court?
You sound like my mother. When I was appointed, she said, she was very proud of me, by the way. She adjusted to things that I did and really was very proud of me. But She said, "Now, what exactly does a bankruptcy judge do? I mean, you're either bankrupt or you're not." "Yeah, if you are, then we have jurisdiction. Now what do we do?" And we make, I think, very practical decisions as well as technical decisions. And sometimes melding the practical with the technical is challenging. Can a company stay in business, or do I have to let the creditor take back their only piece of equipment? We have a lot of pro se debtors in Wisconsin. Do I let them waive the filing fee? The bankruptcy system and the government for that, or well, it goes into the general treasury, but we run on our filing fees. A lot is based on our filing fees. And so it's not something to be done lightly. I have to decide that. It boils down to, we decide things. Does a company stay in business? Do they reorganize or do they liquidate? Do they liquidate at this price or that price? Do they get to keep a piece of property because its value is high or low? We have to decide, sometimes between dueling appraisers, what the value of something is. We do have to be practical. We have to decide if people are paying too much. We have to decide whether people get discharges or not. Did they commit a fraud, or was it an accident? Was it bad judgment? We get a lot of bad judgment. Or are they crooks? Got to decide that. So it's, as I say, a very practical sort of court. And I loved it.
Sounds like another puzzle.
sort of, yes. And sometimes there were no good answers. You had to improvise and make, do the best you can with what you have to work with.
I'm Lucian Jung with the Library of the U.S. Courts of the Seventh Circuit. I was speaking with retired Eastern District of Wisconsin bankruptcy judge Margaret D. McGarrity on Wednesday, July 5th, 2017, for the Court History Archive Project.